This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I think there's a saying that says, three times lucky, third time the charm. But anyway, a number three is always a foreboding of good things. It's always a sign of good, positive things. And so when you are reappointed for the third successive five-year term to be the Director General and the CEO of the Civil Aviation Authority, you know that there's something about the three times lucky adage or the third time charm adage. You're definitely doing something right, and there's definitely something very, very kind of sprinkly, fluffy, lucky around your aura. If you've met Poppy Khoza, you'll know that she's very, very positive as a person. She's one of those forthright leaders, but approachable, accessible, and she's in a field that is generally regarded as male dominated. If my figures are correct, if you look at aviation as a whole, South Africa ranks amongst the five countries that have really done well on the issue of gender access. So India, Ireland, South Africa, and there's Ethiopia, I think. Those are countries that have the highest percentage of female pilots. But even that percentage is less than 11%. But those are countries that are training up women pilots. So that's one aspect of aviation where this progress in South Africa is ranked highly in terms of progress. Then when we look at the aviation ecosystem, so that's everything from airports companies to the Civil Aviation Authority to the engineers to the ground staff to the onboard crew to those who work in the receiving towers, traffic control. That's what we call the aviation ecosystem. Less than 22% of employees in the aviation sector are women. But again, South Africa has done well and has beat that 22% average. And so when we start talking leaders at a C-suite level, and you see that the CEO of the airports company South Africa is a woman, the acting CEO until Professor Lomula took over at SAA was a woman, but some of the senior executive members there are women. The head of the Civil Aviation Authority is a woman. Then again, South Africa is doing something that is beyond the curve and against convention. But leading in an industry that is male-dominated, that requires a lot of liaison with international entities, does take a lot out of you. And so let's find out what it takes as we speak to Poppy Khoza, who is the CEO of the South African Civil Aviation Authority, three-time appointee of that job, and officially began her third term on the 1st of December 2023. Good morning.
Good morning, Elsa. Wow.
You know, and on top of that, elected the first woman president, the first woman president of the 41st ICAO Assembly in 2022. So what is ICAO, yeah. International Civil Aviation Organization?
So the International Civil Aviation Organization is a UN body. Which is responsible to manage civil aviation affairs globally. And it indeed was a humbling moment in September, October 2022 to have been elected to chair the assembly representing South Africa in the 78 years of this UN agency's existence. They've never had a woman before, and to have been bestowed with honor, it's something that I still pinch myself even today. And I must thank our government for creating an enabling environment for women such as myself to play such a meaningful role at a global level.
Okay.
It indeed was no small feat, and I can tell you now, you know, ascending to the stage and, you know, managing the affairs of the assembly over a 2-week period and beyond was quite a nerve-wracking but equally very fulfilling moment,
right.
Something that completely took me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But what was good about it was that I was fully supported. We had the Minister of Transport. In fact, I traveled with the Deputy Minister of Transport at the time, who is now the Minister of Transport, Minister Sindisiwe Tikunga, and the delegation from South Africa, and to just hear the ululation from the South African delegation is a moment that I will forever cherish. And this is not about Poppy Khoza, but at that point in time, it was about South Africa. So I'm eternally grateful.
Okay, so you've had a lot of support, which is wonderful, but it's also on merit, Poppy Khoza, because if I look at, you know, if somebody says, how can she be appointed a DG or a CEO of this organization 3 terms going? Well, in the 8 or so years that you've led, you've had clean audits, and that's from the Auditor General of South Africa. Clean audits in every year. And when it comes to your record of aviation safety, you have reached 87% success against a world average of 65%. So you even beat the world average in terms of the function of the Civil Aviation Authority on safety. And just in terms of how you manage the organization, you've had clean audits. You're one state agency that repeatedly has clean audits, and you've done that in 7 or 8 years that you've led. So there's something there. What is that something?
So I've led for, this is the 12th year, actually.
Right.
First year, because the term is a 5-year term. So I've done 2 terms of 10 years. And the first year was in an acting capacity. And then the two terms of 5 years each, which is 10 years, would have been, you know, appointed on a fixed-term permanent basis, so to speak. So I've just now started a new term, as you've indicated, in December. So over the 11 years that I've been at the helm of the authority, we've had 10 successive clean audits and one unqualified. So 11 unqualified audits and 10 clean audits. So clean audits meaning there were no material findings, as it were. So. But I also attribute that to the sound governance from the board, who provides that adequate, you know, oversight on an ongoing basis, but also the staff of the authority, who are, you know, so dedicated, so committed, and on a daily basis, who really strive to make sure that we do the right thing, over and over. And again, as you've indicated, it's not an easy task, because in a complex environment such as the one that we must navigate, sometimes mistakes can happen, sometimes unethical behavior can happen, and all other things which make, you know, other entities and agencies alike, you know, to be vulnerable or prone, you know, to having, you know, unclean audits, as it were. So I think the message right at the top in terms of ensuring that we drive a clean governance right from the board, you know, that tone, setting the tone of ethical leadership across the board, a culture of responsibility and accountability, but also to be intentional about waking up every morning knowing very well that you have a task to perform and you have no other choice but to perform that task. I think that is the culture that pretty much resonates, and it's a culture that we've entrenched in the authority, and it's a culture that, in fact, we continuously build on, because the litmus test for us after having a clean audit for 10 successive years is, how do we sustain it going forward?
Okay.
And for as long as we say these are non-negotiable for us, I think we will continue to be on the right track.
And it's just about institutionalizing things, isn't it? You know, clean governance should just be the way you run an organization. For every time there's money spent that belongs to the company, people must have receipts and prove what it is that they did with it. For every time a car leaves the premises, it must be logged and recorded. Every time you issue a standard issue laptop, it must have a serial number. It's just the stuff of, as I said earlier on, crossing the I's and dotting the T's. But often when there's pressure or there's a rush to make sure that the financials are in order or there's emergency board meetings, people want to cut corners. And I think this is where the problems begin, because cutting corners on systems means that you don't institutionalize them. So even when there's a new CEO, too many people are now too used to cutting corners.
It's absolutely true. In fact, you've just put it the way that it's supposed to be. It starts small, you know, with little things where people say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do it this way. Yeah. And then it's big, it grows bigger to something that becomes, you know, a culture, a wrong culture that starts permeating across the organization. But if we nip it in the bud, as soon as, you know, wrong behaviors start to emerge, we deal with them decisively, because discipline is very important. To look the other way when you know very well that things are not going right. Yeah. It's doing yourself a disservice. Yeah. And one of the things that we advocate together, because it's not just a one-man show. I work with a very, you know, competent executive leadership team whom the messaging across the board is exactly the same.
Yeah.
There are things that you can tolerate. There are things that are intolerable, especially when it comes to ethics, when it comes to discipline, when it comes to professionalism, and when it comes to ensuring that we deliver on our mandate without fear or favor. So discipline is really at the height of everything that we do.
Yeah,
taking responsibility and accountability.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from you, but it almost feels as if discipline in this particular field is par for the course, because really civil aviation is about making sure that the rules and the standards around safety and security are upheld. And so you've really got to run a protocols on safety and security with almost a kind of a military precision, because an aircraft can't leave the runway, for argument's sake, without being checked and refueled properly and having those technical checks. That is just standard operating procedure. And for the Civil Aviation Authority, you would oversee a lot of those processes as it applies to airlines and as it applies to the airports companies. So I guess discipline is entrenched in how civil aviation needs to be run anyway.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the genesis of civil aviation comes from the military field. Anyway, so that discipline, because we're dealing with lives. So if we tolerate certain things, or if we don't do things right procedurally, and be very stern on process and adequate regulations, and ensure that, you know, they're fit for purpose, but they're equally complied with and adhered to by the industry, then we're putting your life in danger. So it's very important in this environment that we leave no room for mediocre. We leave no room for non-performance, non-compliances, which is why if there is a particular challenge with a particular operator, we don't take anything to light. We ensure that if you don't adhere to the rules and the set standards, you cannot operate. We put you on the ground until you get your affairs in order. I'm sure you would have seen and some frustrations from the public when people would be complaining about, I had a flight to catch, Civil Aviation Authority has grounded you know, the entire fleet of this particular airline. We can't reach our destinations. But all that we do in the interest of ensuring that each and every flight that takes off it must culminate into a successful landing. So okay. There's no room for error, including the personnel whom we license, our pilots who are well recognized globally in terms of the standard, the precision, the competence. It's just beautiful to watch that, you know, the system indeed works, which is why we boast a very good safety record in our country, ranking number one in the continent on aviation safety. In fact, our rating has increased now, Lerato, from 87% to 91%.
Oh, wow. Well done.
And
you.
This is a record that we must preserve with everything that we have.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, Poppy Khoza. When we talk about the Civil Aviation Authority, what is your work? Because when we go to the airport, we see the airlines. Mm-hmm. We're walking through the airport, so we see the infrastructure that's called the airports company. But we see the signs that say Civil Aviation Authority. We don't see you, but we know you're there. You're like the big brother watching.
Absolutely. So we are exactly like the big brother watching. So the Civil Aviation Authority is an agency of government. We report to the Department of Transport or the Minister of Transport. In fact, we derive our mandate from government and through the Act of Parliament. And our share or executive authority or shareholder, as some would put it, is the Ministry of Transport. Mm-hmm. Our responsibility is that of regulating the affairs of civil aviation in the country. So there is no other civil aviation authority except us. We set the standards or the rules, which will ensure that aviation safety and security is well managed to an extent that when you take your flight, everything starts and ends with us, let me put it that way.
Okay.
Every rule, every system that you will go through at an airport would have been a rule and a system that the Civil Aviation Authority is responsible for. So we regulate the entire industry, including Airport Company South Africa. They are licensed to operate by the Civil Aviation Authority. Air Traffic and Navigation Services is equally subjected to the regulatory regime of the Civil Aviation Authority. The airlines, the private flying, and those who are in the recreational aviation sector, as it were, and the new entrants as they relate to remotely piloted aircraft systems or drones. So everything that has to do with civil aviation,
right?
We are the authority that regulates and ensures that there's adequate oversight.
So every aircraft in the sky, every aircraft on the tarmac, on the ground, they have to abide by your rules. The only people who don't have to abide by your rules are military aircraft from the SANDF. Anything else has to come your way.
Everything else. The aircraft, we certify the aircraft. We give approval. We license pilots. We license air traffic controllers, aircraft maintenance engineers. All of them are subjected to the rules under the Civil Aviation Authority.
And that's a huge ecosystem, Poppy Khoza. We'll be exploring it a little bit more after the headlines.
Power Talk, the leadership dialogue.
Yes, and some would say the most unlikely leader, a woman in this intricate male-dominated sphere of civil aviation. But she's there. Some would say an unlikely leader, because how does a girl coming all the way from Edandi, right, in the Umzinyathi district of KZN, you know, those Biggesberg mountains, what does she know about flying? Well, she's there. And the first woman to be elected president of the 41st International Civil Aviation Organization Assembly and presided over it in that year, a UN body. What would she know about the world of aviation? It turns out a lot. It turns out a lot. And, you know, and when we say this girl, from even she was even named the most feminine girly name as well, Poppy, a beautiful flower. Well, what a Poppy know about flying an aircraft? Poppy Khoza, the CEO of the South African Civil Aviation Authority, is our leadership guest today. You're explaining the work of the Civil Aviation Authority, that when it comes to air travel in South African airspace, the regulatory authority is the Civil Aviation Authority. So airlines that want to fly in South Africa, they will get their permission and permits from you. Pilots that want to, you know, commandeer those aircrafts must be licensed by you. Companies that want to set up and manage the infrastructure, like the airports company, they have to have a word with you. Anything to do with us taking to the skies or planes being grounded in their hangars, engineering, it's you.
Yes.
It's a huge ecosystem for safety and security.
Very complex too.
Good God. So a girl from Dundee, hey Bo. How did that happen?
We have a history, you know. I can't repeat it. I don't have to because everyone knows. I really stumbled on this career. I don't know whether stumbling is the correct word, but I came across it, you know, by default. So as I finished my matric and going to the tertiary institution, still very a bit disorganized, let me put it that way, about what do I really want to do.
Yeah.
Had a bit of an idea of what I wanted to do, but also I was open to other possibilities.
Mm.
I get there and I hear that Telkom Natal, through friends, there was a new program that was introduced, travel and tourism. Travel tourism sounded very good.
And exotic.
It said to me, I'm going to travel the world. I will tour. I will see things that I've never seen in my life before. You know, being a bit on an extroverted side, I then said, well, let's go and just, you know, hear. So I visited the faculty and it was a group of us, in fact, a few other friends of mine, you know, to say, let's go and find out. We found out, got the information, and we said, we are signing ourselves, you know, up for this program, contrary to what I had told my parents. So I go through the process, and then I inform them later that I've been accepted, you know, to study now travel and tourism. That's how I got introduced into this beautiful world of air travel,
aviation.
Or aviation.
Okay,
that's how it was. And before I knew it, I was employed by South African Airways. After I had finished the program, I continued to study, including, you know, pursuing studies in aviation that were very specific to the roles that I was given. Up to a master's program in aerospace management. So I've literally worked my way up to where I am. I can tell you now that this was not given on a silver platter. There was a lot and many hoops that I had to jump, rather, you know, to get to, you know, the position of this responsibility.
Okay.
And it was not easy because the transitioning from the old government into a democratic government, you can imagine, including now, I mean, civil aviation remains one of those sectors that are not so transformed. When we joined at that time, you know, there was a buzz about, you know, civil aviation. But to enter this industry was so stressful, so depressing, because you couldn't quite locate who you were in the value chain. It was like someone, you know, was doing you a favor, do this, do that. So we had to go through a host of prejudices, biases, and many other things that you can think of, which is why one of the convictions as a person who is in the leadership position is to say, not in our lifetime, where we will see our young girls and boys as well struggling the same way that we did.
Absolutely.
And we are advocating, I'm one of the gender advocates, you know, to say no single girl must be left behind. Anyone who wishes to enter this industry, they must be given a platform, and we must create this environment where every dream of a girl from Mutu, from Limpopo, somewhere in the rural areas, in Northern Cape, anywhere. We create that environment that firstly, we provide them with the opportunities, we create awareness, we provide opportunities, and we also try as much as possible to get them, you know, to be gainfully employed. There are many other, you know, programs. I don't know if you want me to get
We'll go into them in a moment. We're enjoying your verve and your passion for equality, transformation, and gender access as well. Yes. There's quite a few things that you've said to that point. So let's start off with what transformation looks like in the aviation sector, because one of the prohibitive things from where I stand is cost. So if you want to be a pilot, not only are you going to have need to have good maths and science skills, but you're also going to need to get into a pilot's program and a flight school. And that's a very expensive program. If my memory serves me well, to enter into a 2 or 3 year program, it's almost about 600,000 rands that each individual person would need to have. And so it's not that there aren't clever black or Indian girls and boys. It's whose parents actually have R500,000 to send you to flight school.
So you're absolutely correct. This is an industry that is very expensive. So from a transformation point of view, we have not turned the corner, but we are better off than we were in 1994 even. We're sitting at about 11% African males who are pilots and 42% of females who are pilots. Is it enough? It's not. Can we do more? Absolutely. Especially when we look at the 11% of African males, there is still a lot that we need to do in order to get, you know, the representation that fully represents rather the demographics of our country.
Yeah.
Firstly, it's the limitations are because of financial affordability. To be trained as a pilot, as you've said, you've done your homework very well. It costs you no less just to get to a commercial pilot license. It will cost you no less than 600,000, as you've said. In fact, it's between 600,000 and 800,000. To get to an airline transport pilot license, which is the highest, around 1.2 million. So it's extremely expensive. But through collaboration with the Department of Transport, the Department of Higher Education, the TITA, for instance, who are making funding available, we offer bursaries as the Civil Aviation Authority, to an extent of also sending some of our bursars to other countries, because one of the philosophies that we have is that we will do everything we can in our power to ensure that we expose as many students as we can. We are training many cadet pilots in South Africa, but we've also forged other partnerships with countries such as France. We have about 12 cadets that have been enrolled in France. And there is some funding that we are, you know, we are busy negotiating with other countries to make, you know, the issues of financial affordability a reality, especially for those who are struggling.
Yeah.
Where we see a lot of intake is in the cabin crew, mainly because it's less expensive and the training program is not as intense.
Yeah.
But still very important, because cabin crew are, in fact, safety officers. Over and above cabin crew offering you, you know, ensuring you're comfortable on board, meals and things like those.
Yeah.
But their primary role is being safety officers. So it's less expensive. So we have no challenge with that one. But when it comes to pilots, when it comes to aircraft maintenance
and engineering,
Air traffic controllers, that is where we have a bit of a challenge. Good thing for air traffic controllers is that Air Traffic and Navigation Services does have an academy and they are training pilots. In fact, they're offering bursaries to those who want to be air traffic controllers, to an extent of even, you know, giving the stipends, just like we do.
Okay.
So they collaboratively working together, you know, with the state-owned entities, but also the private sector to a lesser extent, would still want to see the private sector playing more roles, because they're also the consumers of the same skills, would want them to come on board and, you know, honestly put the money on the table and enable this transformation that we want to see. But I think the biggest hindrance, like what we would see in other countries where there is a state-owned academy, whether you talk France, whether you talk Singapore, whether you talk China, and many other countries, that is one thing that I think we as a country, we need to advocate. And I'm glad that the Minister of Transport has elevated this discussion and coordinating with her counterparts in higher education to say, but we need to establish this academy so that the fees become lesser if it's government funded. And you are able then to get, you know, more young learners, you know,
into
the system to be trained as quickly as possible so that the transformation agenda is not stifled.
Just a sidebar. When you said, you know, please, we need to recognize that onboard staff, the flight crew, are first and foremost safety officers. They're not just there to give us food on the flight.
Absolutely.
So I just want to know, why is it when I'm sitting on an emergency lane, if they are the safety officer, why do they say to me, in the event of an emergency, will you open the door? I am not a safety officer. They are. They must open the door.
Remember that there's a limited number of cabin crew on board an aircraft, so they will definitely need assistance. They could also be taking, you know, care of the elderly, they could be taking care of the young ones and so on. So when you're sitting in the emergency exit, and please, emergency exit, I know that there is more legroom, but you don't have to if you are not sure whether you'll be able to assist in an event of an emergency.
And then they move you.
They will rely.
And then they move you.
They do. If you say, no, I don't want, they ask you first. In fact, that's a protocol. They should ask you first, would you be comfortable? If you say you are not comfortable, you will be moved. And a person who's willing to assist, then you'll have to take a best fit. So they do need assistance. Because you can imagine, in a crisis situation, there's a lot that happens at that point in time. So they will definitely rely on the passengers.
But fortunately, there haven't been any of those instances that I know of in South Africa, certainly not in the recent past. Let's move
this. We don't take chances here. We really don't take chances.
Okay, let's move along. You mentioned air traffic control. So in terms of the jobs that are available, we've spoken about engineering and pilots, very expensive to train. We've spoken about onboard crew. And then you mentioned air traffic control. So those are the people who sit in the flight towers and are deciding which planes are landing, which planes are taking off. They are studying the radar up above. And, you know, I have read that air traffic control ranks as one of the top 10 most stressful jobs in the world. In fact, air traffic controllers often complain of suffering from PTSD. Why is that? Why is this such a highly stressful, tense, demanding job?
You know, I would say all these jobs are quite demanding, I must say. You know, all of them are quite demanding. So I don't want to shine the spotlight only on air traffic controllers because of the level of precision, but also knowing that there is no room for error. Any mistake that you make can cost lives. So that alone, that realization of knowing that you have a huge responsibility in your hand is stressful on its own. And when you have to now perform the job with this precision that is expected, highly regulated environment, as it were. So it does, it's inherent. You know, the stress that you can't do anything about because of the magnitude of the responsibility that, that is in your hand. But I think we've seen, you know, a host of, you know, we call them mental issues. Stress is one of them, and depression and so on. Post-COVID, which of course, you know, got exacerbated by many other factors, losing of the loved ones, losing of the jobs and not knowing whether today you would have a job. So that was elevated. And mental health issues is one of those issues that we've elevated. In fact, even in the National Aviation Conference, which we hosted last month, we shone a spotlight on mental health issues across the value chain. But also to say there are interventions. So if you feel stressed, talk. But also the companies and the organizations are also duty bound to provide that support, you know, to the workforce. Because this is, again, borders on safety, borders on security, and we don't take those issues. There are medical protocols. In fact, in the Civil Aviation Authority, we have a fully fledged aviation medicine department that looks after these issues. We have psychiatrists, psychologists that we are working with who are looking after the well-being of the
Okay, I don't want to make this the sort of the central issue because it's flight air traffic control around the world, not in South Africa. It's regarded as a highly stressful job because we're told, you know, you've got a 3-minute window to make a decision. So flight SA81 from Perth is landing. They're asking you for permission to land. But at the same time, flight SA81 from Perth wants to land. The Emirates Air from Dubai also wants to land, and Delta from Atlanta wants to land. And you've literally got 3 minutes to make that decision. At the same time, Fly Safair wants to go to Cape Town. SA Express wants to go to Namibia, and they want to take off in that 3-minute window. And you in air traffic control have to make those decisions in literally that space of time.
No, it is absolutely true. But the good thing is that adequate training, but also the environment, which provides all the adequate tools to assist the, in that decision-making. Air Traffic and Navigation Services, in fact, does invest a lot in the supportive tools and mechanisms and systems to enable air traffic controllers to be able to take, you know, those decisions timely and correct decisions, as it were.
Okay, so we've been talking about safety in the air, safety on the ground, safety on the maintenance side, governance and audits. Let's talk about sustainability because, you know, South Africa's committed itself to a few international protocols and conventions on the just energy transition. And whilst we often focus a lot on how that transition is going to happen in mining, automobile sector is another sector that's going to see significant impact, and aviation, because even right now when you buy your air ticket, your ticket, if you read it closely, it will tell you that your journey from Joburg to Cape Town is going to emit X amount of CO2 emissions. So that tax has been factored into the ticket. So already sustainability is a huge theme in aviation. Where else are we going to see sustainability featuring? I've heard a lot of talk about biofuels and maybe not using jet fuels.
So, yeah, we refer to bio, in fact, it's now called sustainable aviation fuel because we it's been realized that the feedstock could come, in fact, from everywhere, from waste materials, from used oil, from plants, and so on. So sustainable aviation fuels, which is cleaner energies, is seen as a quick win, strategically important, and for broader, you know, sustainability. So there is an ongoing discussion between the Department of Transport. Our Minister of Transport is leading that, and with the counterparts in energy and environmental affairs, pave a way in terms of how does South Africa locate itself in these decisions that have been taken. It's a developing science. None of the countries have really gotten it right. And part of the aviation policy which the minister is currently taking through, you know, the approval processes, cabinet and so on, but public consultation will also feature prominently the issues of environmental protection, but specifically the sustainable aviation fuels. We do believe in as much as aviation contributes about 2% of carbon emissions, but we do have a role to play consistent with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which have called all states to take action to combat climate change. So each and every sector of economy has a role in terms of ensuring that we reduce carbon emissions. So there are bigger things which, at the right time, the Minister of Transport, together with the other ministers, will be communicating and announcing in terms of where do we go
with respect
to reducing carbon emissions in civil aviation, but improvement of aircraft technology, and so on and so on.
Okay, and what that means is that once these protocols are introduced, it's going to change sort of the makeup of an airport, right? Because where you have the fuel storage, where you refine, etc., the pipelines. So
absolutely.
So the look and feel of airports is also going to have to change. But what it does mean is whatever fuels of the future are, it does speak to optimization and connectivity. And one of the biggest issues that people have been complaining about, and I don't want to hold you responsible for all the things that have happened at SAA, because that's above your purview, but people are married and committed to the idea of a successful SAA because it is the flag bearer and a national carrier. And whilst there have been many problems at SAA after business rescue, we don't need to go into that. The issue is, when does SAA regain its former glory? I know that we've seen the reintroduction of routes to Brazil, and we've seen the reintroduction last month of the route to Australia. But the question is, the permits that are required, you know, so even if they had a business plan for expansion, that would be inside SAA. But once they decide they're wanting to fly to New York or London or Hong Kong, civil aviation comes into that party as well. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works in terms of routes, how they are mapped, how they are licensed? And this idea, like you referred to it earlier on, you get to the airport and suddenly your aircraft is not flying because something went wrong. How are those decisions made?
So as a civil aviation authority, we issue what we call an air operator certificate, but they have to go through, you know, another council, international air service licensing council, as well as the domestic, to get the license to operate first. And then they come to the civil aviation authority. We then issue them with an air operator certificate. By the act of law, South African Airways is designated as a national carrier. In the South African Airways Act. So in terms of the route development, some of these routes, because they are bilateral air service agreements first, which gives passage for SAA to fly into these countries. And those bilateral air service agreements, they do detail, you know, the protocols and the conditions and the rules and so on. So we then play a supportive role when South African Airways say, we want now to resume our operations to New York. We make sure that they are fit for purpose, their aircraft, their pilots are licensed adequately. So all the compliance requirements, you know, are checked.
Okay.
Then our counterparts on the other side would then rely on our assessment to also do their own due diligence and then say, South African Airways, now you are permitted to fly to the U.S. Mm. But with the starting point is the bilateral air service agreement, which South Africa has with many countries, including, you know, the big countries, the Australians and so on. And all that we need to do from the SACAA is to make sure that they are compliant to fly to those countries.
Okay, and compliance, as we wind down the conversation, is to say for this particular routing, do the pilots have the necessary paperwork? I mean, I was told that during COVID, even though somebody's been a pilot for 20 years, to transport vaccines, they had to have exams done to be allowed to bring in those vaccines. So
that's
person's
correct.
Been a pilot for 30 years, but they still needed to sit an exam to qualify to bring in medical supplies.
Recurrency training happens on a frequent basis.
Wow.
Yearly or in 2 years. So that you are trained as a pilot today and you qualify, but you still have to maintain that license, write the exams, do the medical checks and do proficiency training and all those other things. So refresher training is part of the process, which is why we have such a good record, because we don't falter on those issues.
Okay, so you're in your third term for 5 years. What are your priorities in 30 seconds?
So new things that are coming, very exciting. I'm sure you would have heard about air taxis. We're busy with the concept. The world is moving. New models, business models are shifting. We're strengthening the remotely piloted aircraft systems, focusing on transformation again, because until transformation is addressed, we cannot rest. But also to continue to run a clean governance, to elevate our rating with the UN agency, sitting at 91%, we want to see ourselves at 98, 99%.
Wow.
So, yeah, our work is really cut out.
And you've got the wind beneath your wings. A lot of South Africans are inspired. Gracious Moleta says, this is so highly inspirational, Lerato. I'm a student pilot. May God continue to bless Poppy Khoza and give you more strength. You motivate me every day, Lerato. This is what we call women winning. And we want you to win, Poppy Khoza, because we want safer skies and we want an economy that grows and allows South Africans to travel the world, to travel to South Africa, and South African entrepreneurs to sell their goods and wares to a much bigger audience and or a much bigger market. And you are right at the center of creating those opportunities. Poppy Khoza, CEO of the SA Civil Aviation Authority.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.